This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello, and welcome to this final edition of the Saxo Market Call for 2021. It is Thursday, 30th of December, and we just want to say at the top of the show, thank you so much, listeners, for a great 2021. We've more than doubled our listenership this year. We hope to do so again next year and bring you some great content. So thanks for tuning in, and we wish you all the best as we transition into 2022, where we think there's going to be a slightly different set of circumstances for the equity market, certainly given the equity market valuations, given the lack of breadth, given all the other things we've talked about. But let's take a brief overview, first of all, on slide two of the year to date for our various theme baskets, where you can see the performance sorted on a year to date basis. And you can see it's, you know, there's a lot of lines there, but that fourth line, the mega caps, and their 38% performance, since this is the heaviest part of the market, that really has been a main contributor to the performance this year, with those top 10, 20 stocks really contributing to most of the gains. And we've talked a lot about market breadth, and I've got some more perspective on that as well. But look at some of the real draggers down there. A lot of this being the bubble stocks, e-commerce, these things that got really incredibly valued on too few profits, too great evaluation, some in some cases on IPOs, in which there is essentially no earnings to look at for the foreseeable future, just over enthusiasm in that space. And we'll be talking more about that next week with Peter Garnery. I did want to pull out one thing, and it's a thing we've talked about before, the underinvestment in the energy space, and just also the lack of investor enthusiasm. So if we look at where how energy performed, and traditional energy in this case, in 2021, something like the XLE ETF, mostly in oil majors, a lot of that being Exxon and Chevron, a great year for 2021, up nearly 50% for the year, but that really only takes it back to where it was around the end of 2018. Whereas something like the oil services index, it was only up 20% despite the recovery in crude oil prices. And that is performance still leaves it down some 80% from the highs of 2014. I saw another news story. I tweeted it out earlier this morning on U.S. banks unwilling to loan to the shale drilling sector. So we have this real longer-term supply concern and lack of enthusiasm and investment space. How does that leave you feeling going into 2022, among other factors, for crude oil?
Well, that is the exact reason why the market is, and we also remain bullish on the energy sector, because this is really the key, because global energy consumption is not going to come down anytime soon. Demographics and prosperity across some of the emerging countries, emerging markets, simply doesn't allow for that, even though we have a push towards the decarbonization. So that basically requires continued new oil wells to be found and to be drilled. And with these kind of numbers, that does clearly indicate that it's coming at a higher cost. The report you're referring to is the monthly report from the Federal Reserve of Bank of Dallas. It can be found on the, just looking at Google for Dallas Fed. It's very interesting because they ask oil executives quite a lot of different questions, and one of them was clearly that the price pressures are rising, and especially for equipment leasing and other input costs, which has risen to an all-time high, part of the whole supply chain problems we had all year. So that basically leaves the oil price, it needs to be at a relatively elevated level in order for these producers to continue to produce. But at the same time, yesterday in the weekly EIA report, we saw production was increased by 200,000 barrels in the latest during the past week. It's now back to the highest since May 2020. And if we, in one of the questions asked to the oil executives, what were their key priority in 22? And it was actually nearly 50% said it was to grow production, whereas only something like 10-12% were looking to reduce debt. So it seems like there's more optimism coming into the sector, but it's obviously and most likely, most clearly, as you said, that John, coming at a high cost.
All right. And then let's look at a couple of other things about the year in review and even the 3 years in review. If you look at the remarkable stock market performance of the last 3 years, have some perspective on that front on slide three, simply the yearly returns of, or the yearly chart on a log price axis basis of the S&P 500. And you're seeing that we're wrapping up, assuming we don't collapse in today or tomorrow's trade. The U.S. markets are open tomorrow. Europe mostly closed tomorrow. But we have a 90%+ performance for the last 3 years running, some 28% of that being this year. The best performance in 20 years on a three-year return basis. You would have to go back to the late 90s to find that kind of performance. And some could argue, well, we saw that performance and even better than that from 95, 96, 97, and then we had two more years of bull market. But I would say the circumstances are somewhat different this time around, with things like market breadth, with things like the fact that back then you had the yields coming down very, very strongly all the way through the balance of 1998 from a starting point of 7.8%, both on the 10-year and 7.7%, also almost the same on the two-year at the beginning of 1995. Imagine those yields and those reducing to 4.5% approximately, the entire yield curve collapsing some 300+ basis points over the following 3 years. Before rising in 99, and then finally it was the Fed tightening and, of course, extreme overvaluation and the internet bubble that saw the things roll over into 2000. This time around, we have, and we've talked a lot about market breadth. I would encourage on this front as well, and on the risks that the Fed can't engender the kind of response as quickly as it did during the pandemic because of, the inflation focus now. And ironically, some of this market success feeding that inflation focus, because some at the those that have retirement portfolios of sufficient size have seen such success in their performance that if they're edging towards retirement, they're simply left the market. And some they may even be retired early that were maybe 5 years away from retirement if their portfolios were sufficiently large. And those would be in some of the more higher paid positions as well, most likely. So, and on that perspective, as part of the inflationary story, there's a great podcast out on macrovoices.com with guest Jesse Felder of the Felder Report. He offers some great perspective on that. And I plucked out one thing he's pointing out from a Bloomberg article on a tweet he sent out here on slide three, talking about that last week, the S&P 500 closed at its new high for the year. And yet 334 companies trading on the New York Stock Exchange hit 52-week low, something that has been seen since the end of December 99. Now, if you recall back to 2000, and of course, markets never repeat, they rhyme at best. There was, of course, another, let's call it 9 months of the S&P 500 rallying, or at least stumbling sideways to trying to rally before things rolled over. So this doesn't necessarily mean we're going to tumble in the new year, but it is a long-term stress factor for the quality and the narrowness of this rally in equity markets. And then specifically yesterday, we saw a slightly interesting development in the U.S. Treasury market, with the yields at the long end of the curve jumping suddenly and doing so to a one-month high. It's a little bit too early to call this a significant technical development, but for perspective, I put a longer-term chart up on slide four. You can see arguably something like a head and shoulders formation forming here. If we get above those that descending trend line, something like 1.65 to 1.7%, the actual highs from 2021 close to 1.75%. So be watching that as a really critical factor, certainly on the valuation front. And if we're not getting above there, what is that saying about the market's forward prospects? What is the market saying about the forward prospects for the economy if those long yields are not able to achieve anything resembling a liftoff? Okay, to round out my space, a couple of FX points to make. Dollar versus the Turkish lira has been rising quite aggressively. It rose again further today before falling back a little bit. So the Turkish lira weakening and now stabilizing a bit today. We have this Erdogan plan to some kind of deposit insurance scheme that many analysts are really questioning what this is, how it works, and doubting whether it can work. But it has for now, and plus considerable reserves thrown into the works to intervene, stabilized the Turkish lira. And yet, if we look at the forward yields for longer-term Turkish lira bonds, these are poking to record highs for the cycle. So the market is saying, while the lira has stabilized somewhat, but has weakened recently, the market is saying it does not see inflation coming down if you look at those longer-term yields. I think the only thing that could stabilize the lira quite quickly here would be if Mr. Erdogan calls elections and the market suspects, and Turks suspect that a new president can be elected and we'll see a change back to some sort of more orthodox policy. And on that front, I tweeted out a Reuters article suggesting that elections could be on the horizon, Erdogan thinking that he's done enough to stabilize things that he may be able to squeak through in an election scenario. I don't know. These are just reports from people in the know, but something to watch there, certainly in the EM space. And then I put out a article. You can look on my Twitter feed at John J. Hardy, looking at some trading themes for 2022 for all of the G10 currencies and the Chinese renminbi. So check that out. And one of those, as we note, or one of the themes, as we note, going into the end of the year is this weak Japanese yen, whether we see it rolling back to the strong side if into the new year, as we've seen a quarterly pattern in Japanese yen this year, and a strong sterling. And one of my trades is actually looking and wondering at whether trading themes, whether the sterling rally has much potential to the upside. I'm doubting whether it does. I think the UK economy has got a positive output gap. It's been hit by this energy situation, so doubting whether it can extend much further from here. But have a look at that, and we'll see how the beginning of the year shapes up. It's very, quite often very interesting how the first couple of weeks of the year shape up, and FX new trends are often established in that time frame. Okay, Ole, I'm talking too much. Help me out here. We've got to look at gold here. The song remains the same. It gets a little, shows a little potential, rallies, maybe breaks a little pivot level. And I guess this latest disappointment here is in part on that little additional spike in yields yesterday.
Yeah, on that note, John, it's actually quite fitting that just take a look at your slide 6 with your trends on the currencies, where we got a round zero in gold. And that's really just highlighting very well what's happening to the gold mine. It has been happening for quite a while now, absolutely nothing almost. We're stuck around 1800. That's coincidental, the average price for the year. It's also more or less the 200-day moving average. So gold is simply has been struggling to find momentum in either direction. And as you mentioned, the slight weakness we saw yesterday was in response to that pickup in bond yields. But as you also mentioned, we really need to see where the yields are carrying us next year. That is the main concern and one main reason why we've seen downgrades from analysts in recent months for the outlook for 2022, that yields will spike higher and that will create a lot of headwinds for gold. I just put in the gold versus the real yield. And as you can see, there is quite a discrepancy between where real yields are currently around -1% and where gold is. Could indicate that gold should be able to withstand at least some of the expected rise in real yields over the coming months. In addition, and that's also important, ETF holdings has been on a downward drift now for more than a year. We enter the year on a relatively robust note, but as the stock markets continue to move higher and we saw volatility remain low, the appetite for money managers to or the need to buy alternatives such as gold basically start to fade. We also had the rally in cryptos back then, and that basically means that money managers right now they're holding relatively small position, and for that to change, we really need to see a major change in the outlook for either yields or for the inflation or potentially for the dollar. So so we are stuck in neutral as we head into 2022.
And on the crypto front, you brought that into the conversation. I just want to highlight for those that don't focus much on crypto, we don't spend a lot of time on it here, but I think it's an important indicator. And we have had a lot of weakness here of late. Suggest on at least at the margin, there is maybe some sort of liquidity issue in the system. It's a very important speculative area. And so when it's tipping over, we like to pay attention to it. The Ethereum price actually closed yesterday at a multi-month low. I think it was briefly lower intraday, but it hasn't really closed as low as it did yesterday since early October. And there's a key support level in Bitcoin around 45,000, 45,500, a pretty well-defined range support. So maybe watch that as a leading indicator, potentially on just speculative energy and risky assets more broadly. I would certainly, if I was speculating in the equity space, want the Bitcoin price back higher as a coinciding indicator or indicator of comfort in the speculative energy out there. But back to you, Olin. You've got some important perspective on the agricultural space. We had quite a remarkable year this year.
We have indeed. And just round up gold. Basically, right now, if you are, a lot of people are sitting on their hands, so we really need to break above 1850 or even higher. The October, November, we had around the 1870 area. But yes, John, it's been a very, very strong year for agricultural commodities. The sector has seen its strongest year since 2010. I think it's being felt around the world that we've seen that these price rises has seen across all commodities has really also been seen in the agricultural space, unfortunately, you can say, up nearly up nearly 30% on the year. The Bloomberg Commodity Agricultural Index, and you can see some of the gains there led by coffee and some of the oils. But the prospects for next year is still really one where we need to focus on weather. If we do have another weather troubled weather year, then supplies are relatively tight, and that could lead to even higher prices. Adding to that, the surge in gas price we've seen during the past few months has led to an equal surge in the cost of ammonia and fertilizers. And again, the market will be speculating what kind of impact that has on the crop planting intentions by farmers next year. Will they seek crops that has a lower fertilizer intensity? So that really will be one to watch. But generally, the sector is the market is looking, the futures market is pointing towards tightness. We've got the 1 year roll spread between spot and 12 months out trading in a backwardation at around 5%. That basically means if you bought a basket of 9 food commodities 1 year out, you would be sitting on a 5 year roll yield, 5% yield at unchanged prices in a year's time. So that's also worth taking into consideration, that the market is pricing in a tight market.
Okay, and so let's look at the macro calendar as we wind up this year. Last interesting data points are up today and tonight with the U.S. Weekly jobless claims, and then the Chinese official manufacturing non-manufacturing PMI says they're grappling with regional shutdowns based on an outbreak of the Omicron variant, which to my mind is spiking to such levels, especially here in Denmark with the very, very extensive testing. I mean, just it is absolutely everywhere here. And I have to imagine we're getting on a very compressed time frame for that. So I think that'll be, the market is looking through it, but I think that will be, we'll get a clear sense of the trajectory there very shortly, simply from the scale of acceleration we're seeing in case counts, at least in the case of a place like Denmark, where again, the testing is quite thorough. All right, but let's look at the first week of the year. It will be an important week. We'll have a little bit of time on Monday because there's no major data points out, and they're delaying the usual timing of things like the ISM a day next week to let people get into the new year without a sudden data releases. A couple of points besides that ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing or services now next week. We have, of course, that key employment report. And I think, again, the average hourly earnings is going to get increasing focus there because that is where the wage price spiral potentially kicks in. I mentioned earlier with the older workers retiring, not in the labor force, risk of high pressure on wages, but also the soft spot for Europe, Italy, where we have the presidential election. There are all kinds of scenarios around that, especially if Draghi is sort of drafted, if you will, to become president. It's an awkward timing because he's trying to launch the recovery package plan and put that together. Suddenly he's derailed in terms of doing that to take the presidential spot, which would likely require snap elections. And then you have a very interesting mix politically with his Brothers of Italy party. It's much more EU skeptic and has had very different points from the current government. So we have to watch politics in Europe for sure next year, also with the new German government, and geopolitics, as we have Biden and Putin meeting today on the, of course, the Ukraine issue. And that news flow needs to calm down, I think, to avoid all the risks we've been talking about with natural gas. And of course, even worse prospects of hopefully not, but hot wars close to EU borders. So that will be a wrap for 2021. Thank you again for a great year, and we'll be back already on Monday with the next edition of the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.